Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and now a call in around a not-so-simple question pertaining to the de Blasio campaign. What does it mean that he visited Nicaragua in 1988? And for those of you politically active at that time, what do you think we need to know today about that time? Let's call it Contras and Context. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. As you may know, the New York Times recently profiled de Blasio's early activism and described a trip that he took to Sandinista-controlled Nicaragua in 1988. This was billed as a humanitarian visit to distribute medical supplies, but the Times paints a picture of a young activist who continued to show sympathies for the Soviet-backed Sandinista government. In the U.S., de Blasio was active in organizations that supported them as they tried to fend off the U.S.-backed Contra rebels. A few years later, the Times quoted de Blasio referring to democratic socialism as his vision for society. So our question to you, what does it mean that Bill de Blasio visited Nicaragua and worked for organizations sympathetic to the Sandinistas? 212-433-WNYC. And for those of you who may have done this yourself or been involved with, maybe you weren't even so pro-Sandinista as anti-Reagan policy in Central America in the 1980s, give people who may be younger, who may not have been around at that time, a lens on what this meant for you and what do you think it says about somebody like Bill de Blasio who was involved at the time. 212-433-WNYC. Tell us about your own trip to Managua, if you took one, or to the hinterlands of Nicaragua. 212-433-9692. I noticed that there were a number of letters to the editor who didn't seem to like the Times article that much supporting de Blasio. And here's one example. It says, for readers who did not spend their youth in activist circles, the term democratic socialism, as once used by Mr. de Blasio, can easily be misunderstood. Among young activists in the 1980s, when I was committed to many of the same causes, writes this reader, the phrase democratic socialism signaled the thinking of a person who yearned for fundamental social change, but who especially identified with the humane and calm agendas of the labor parties of Europe and Latin America. So that's one response to the Times article from one of their readers. How about for you? I don't know if this is going to change any votes, but what does it change about how you see Bill de Blasio? 212-433-WNYC. And we will take your calls right after this. We go up to this break with a relevant song from The Clash. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Now your calls on what it means to you that Bill de Blasio traveled to Nicaragua and expressed support for the Sandinista government in the 1980s, and maybe your stories of doing the same, maybe especially for the benefit of younger listeners who don't know the context. 212-433-9692. Certainly I know supporters of de Blasio who say the context is important, that in the mid-1980s it made sense for a progressive activist to display sympathies for Nicaragua, particularly given that the U.S. was secretly and illegally sending arms to the Contra rebels in that country. Remember the Iran-Contra scandal? So RJ in Prospect Heights, you're on WNYC. Hi, RJ.
Hi. I actually knew Bill de Blasio back then. I worked on similar issues. And I just, the context that I want to lay out is that There was actually a widespread health rights movement concerning Central America during the 80s. There were a lot of healthcare professionals of all stripes, psychological, physical, otherwise, going down to various Central American countries because of the desperation of the poor down there and the conflicts, the consequences of the conflicts. And it wasn't, it was a primarily, though not exclusively, humanitarian. There was a mix of ideological people involved, and there wasn't any, there were no litmus tests for your ideological classification in order to participate in one of these organizations.
Right.
It was simply, do you have the professional qualifications, and are you willing to go down, spend your own money to go down there and help people?
But there were humanitarian needs all over the world at that time. So it probably tended to draw people who felt that they had a dog in the fight, not supporting the Soviet Union in the Cold War, which is how some people might try to paint it, but opposed to Reagan's intervention in Central America militarily or with the CIA, kind of pseudo-militarily, and maybe being taken with the kind of experiment that the Sandinistas were trying to undertake at the time, yes?
Yes. Well, I do think that the Reagan administration's involvement throughout the region was critically important, and certainly the proximity to the United States was important because that was how the Cold War was being played out. But the last part of what you said was...
Oh, just that people were interested in what the Sandinistas were trying to do. I think a lot of people, probably including de Blasio, he's even quoted it in the Times, thinks that it didn't end that well.
Right. Well,
but those were the early idealistic days of
it. Yes. But what's also clear is that because there were at least five countries involved throughout Central America, El Salvador, Nicaragua, Guatemala and Honduras, which were much less focused on than the others, were also getting a lot of humanitarian health workers coming down from the United States.
And El Salvador had the opposite problem. It had a repressive authoritarian government that was a right-wing government and that was being supported by the United States at that time because it was all caught up in the context of the Cold War. Ellen in Brooklyn Heights, you're on WNYC. Hi, Ellen.
Hi. First of all, I'm kind of shocked that the New York Times would do a story like that, would do research and from almost 30 years ago, and put it on the front page. And now it's become kind of the major story of the campaign, with Leota's statements and other people's statements, and painting Bill de Blasio as a flaming radical Marxist who's running for mayor of New York.
Right. Well, I think it was more nuanced. I think it was more nuanced than that. Certainly the Post now has its theme from now to Election Day, right? They had their Anthony Weiner and Elliot Spitzer to go with during the primary. Now, this is going to be it in the Post until Election Day with respect to de Blasio, no question. But don't you want to know about the candidates' earlier backgrounds, especially if, say, as in this case, it doesn't really appear on his professional bio?
Yeah, but it's not a story that's worthy of putting it on the front page. It's really trying to tip the election. It's very, very political of the Times to do that. I could see if it appeared in the Post or the News, because they're kind of up to that kind of business anyway.
Ellen, thank you for your call. By the way, Bill de Blasio will be our first guest on tomorrow's show, the candidate himself, as we continue to talk to him and Joe Loda and other candidates. There are interesting minor party candidates this election, too, here on the show. So Bill de Blasio at 10 o'clock sharp tomorrow morning, if you're interested. Peter in the Bronx, you're on WNYC. Hi, Peter.
Hi, Brian. I was down in Nicaragua for a month in summer in the mid-80s, studying Spanish at a school, which was partially going down there to learn Spanish, partially kind of a mild protest against what the United States was doing, and also to learn about what really was going on. I could talk about that, but in terms of de Blasio, I always had the feeling during the primaries that, you know, there are a lot of people who will put forward a bunch of liberal programs, especially John Liu. But you had a sense with de Blasio, or I had a sense, that there was kind of a deep structure there of compassion, of trying to understand the roots of inequality and a society. It wasn't just a hodgepodge of liberal policies. And I guess now I see the thread running through his life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's interesting, Peter. Thank you very much. And there is, well, we got a tweet that de Blasio's reaction to the story has been to deny that he ever used the term democratic socialism. So we will see what he says about that tomorrow. Well, we're not going to spend the whole interview on this tomorrow, but that's probably a question worth asking. A lot of people did say democratic socialism at that time. Some would say it today, and it certainly wasn't socialism in the Marxist sense. It was democratic socialism, as the letter writer who I read from was contextualizing it earlier, having to do with the philosophy of, for example, the labor parties in Europe and Latin America. Vincent in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Hi, Brian. Long time listening to you, so thanks for giving me an opportunity. I want to echo the previous caller's sentiments. I myself was down in Nicaragua with an organization called CASA, Central American Solidarity Association, to go down to pick coffee to help the struggling Sandinista government feed its people. And I think that the New York Times actually did a service to people who want to send de Blasio, because my first month there, we lived in abject poverty. We were sick with dysentery. We were sick with malaria. The country was very underdeveloped. And I just want to quickly give you a context for that. People don't realize that for many years, this government supported the Somoza regime, which is very brutal and dictatorial. And there was just wide swaths of people that lived in poverty. I mean, people were dying at the age of 36 and 37 from diseases that could be very easily cured in this country. So I think that de Blasio's profound understanding of poverty and inequality and injustice comes from a very deep place, because when you have to live among people that are literally struggling every day just to eat and survive, and living without electricity, living without all the things that we take for granted in this country, it really gives you a perspective on things. And I would have to say for myself, it led me into a life of working on those issues as well. So I really think that I mean, despite contrary to what people believe, I think this is a really good service to him. It's a credit to him. And I think it's going to give people an even greater appreciation of who he is and mm-hmm. what he's about and his vision for the city.
Thank you, Vincent. I appreciate your call. On the health delivery, one of the other letters to the Times in reaction to the article is by Gary Slutkin from Chicago, who writes, de Blasio recalled having an epiphany at a health clinic in Nicaragua when he saw a map posted on the wall which showed the precise location of every family in town. The article continued, the doctors used it as a blueprint for door-to-door efforts to spread the word about the importance of immunizations and hygiene, unquote. And he writes, as a doctor, I was part of a team that used efforts like this in the 1980s in Somali refugee camps, reducing infant and child mortality rates by 50%. So he concludes, I am very encouraged by Mr. de Blasio's enthusiasm for this public health technology, still greatly underused and desperately needed in the United States. So a particular healthcare policy piece to be taken out of this whole Nicaragua Sandinista conversation. We'll take one more call. Rich, you're on WNYC. Hello, Rich.
Hi, how are you? Thanks for taking my call. I think that's just a little soundbite, and I think you need to look at someone's life and what have they done. Is this a pattern? You just can't take that one incident. For example, if I was running against de Blasio and I admitted, yeah, one time I supported the Taliban, that would sound terrible and it would be all over the papers. Well, what if I supported the Taliban when they were fighting Russia and the United States was supporting them?
Right.
So that's just a little soundbite. Mm-hmm. I really think someone's ideology, based on what they've done their entire life, if it becomes a pattern, then you decide. You're going to vote for him or you're not going to vote for him.
So, Rich, right, is there some photo out there, Rich, of you shaking hands with Saddam Hussein in the 70s?
I don't know. If I run against someone, I'm sure it'll come out.
Did you say you're undecided? Why are you undecided?
I really would like to know more. I want to go with de Blasio, but I really don't feel like I know enough. And I'm actually, this is a very good conversation as far as your radio program, because it is enlightening me. So
Rich, thank you very much. Let us know when you make up your mind one way or another. We thank all of you for your calls. Now, we've talked a lot about the pre-K proposal and the Sandinista background. And tomorrow, Bill de Blasio will be our first guest right as we start out here at 10 o'clock. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. A lot more to come today.